I'm Charles Sipos. It's Curtain Call on KRCB Santa Rosa, and we're going to extend Curtain Call today with a very special guest. Esa-Pekka Salonen was, for 17 years, the music director of the Los Angeles Symphony, and he's in the area to conduct San Francisco Symphony in programs tonight and tomorrow night at Davies Symphony Hall. And I spoke with him after rehearsal yesterday at Davies Symphony Hall. He's here to conduct his award-winning violin concerto, which is going to be performed under his direction by Lila Josefowicz. And here is the interview. Esa-Pekka Salonen, welcome to Curtain Call.
Thank you.
I've heard you quoted as saying you are a composer who conducts, and most of us know you as a conductor, and not many of us know you as a composer. And you are an extraordinary composer.
Thank you.
And evidence of that is your violin concerto, which I just heard in rehearsal.
Well, in terms of how I call myself, or how what kind of term people use when they talk about me, I don't think it matters really, because I cannot completely separate the two sides of my music making from each other. So when I conduct, I'm a performing musician. When I write music, I'm a creative musician. And most of the time, I'm kind of trying to be both at the same time. And this, of course, was totally normal in our world about 100 years ago still. Most people known as performers, primarily known as performers, were composers as well, and vice versa. And the kind of separation, clinical separation of composing side from the performing side happened quite late. I would say in the 30s, in the 40s, and after the war, certainly, we started seeing people who didn't venture to the other side of the fence. And, you know, Karajan was a very typical new age conductor who did not compose. Even Toscanini was a composer at some point in his life. Furtwängler very much saw himself as a composer. And most of the composers of the previous era conducted or played the piano publicly or whatever. And then there was this division. But of course, it is not an isolated phenomenon. It has to do with the general trend of specializing in our society and our culture. And I had a very striking example of this. And it sounds untrue, but this really happened in L.A. some years ago. There was a very sort of rainy winter. I think it was 97 or something like that, El Nino winter. And it was raining 6 weeks solid, more or less, and my house started leaking in several places, of course. As you know, Southern California houses don't take water very well. And I called a roofer, and he came, a Russian guy, and he said, no, it's not the roof, it's the deck that is leaking. So I called a deck man, who was also Russian, coincidentally. And at this point it's becoming surreal, but he says, no, it's actually not the deck either, it's the threshold between the deck and the house. I said, okay, fine, can you fix it? No, you have to get a threshold man. At which point, I mean, we found a threshold man who actually fixed the thing, and it was all fine, but I realized that this is the way it's going. You know, doctors are specializing in even fewer organs. Roofers don't do thresholds. And the fact that there are very few people who perform and compose.
So how did you come to composing, and how did you come to conducting? Were they separate? You also play an instrument, right?
The French horn was my main instrument, always. And I played the piano, of course, and I took some cello lessons as well, but never got very far with the string instruments. But French horn was my thing. And I started composing very early. I think I was 11 or 12 or something like that. And I, you know, no Mozart stuff here. But they were compositions, nevertheless. And I always felt already then that composing is the most fascinating thing there is in the world. And I most likely It had to do with the fact that I was a lonely kid, the only child in the family, and I read a lot, and I had all kinds of, you know, interests that my pals were not sharing with me, or I couldn't share with my peers, and you know, I listened to classical music and I enjoyed poetry and that kind of stuff. And you know, a boy of 11 is supposed to play soccer or ice hockey or whatever and just be out there and be normal, as it were. So I spent quite a bit of time on my own, and composing was most likely an attempt to create my own world where I could rule, as it were. I could decide on the grammar, the language, the, you know, what is allowed, what is not allowed. It just felt like a safe haven, in a way, for a young kid. And then, of course, it changed later on, and it became more question of exploration, and then later on, pushing the boundaries, and finally, expression, without much regard to the laws of the postmodernist European art music or whatever. Some kind of freedom that I achieved later in life.
Would you call that finding your voice as a composer?
Most likely. I mean, when I hear my early stuff from the late 70s and early 80s, I don't disown them. It's still music I can very well remember having written and all that, but I cannot somehow go back to the sort of mental, emotional, intellectual state of where I was at the time. So from that point of view, it feels like music that was written by somebody else. And I think that my move to LA made it possible for me to really start writing the kind of music I wanted to write. As I was far enough away from the rules and laws of the European modernism, and Pierre Boulez was not living next door, and you know, it was just, I just felt that I was far enough away. And also there's about something about this part of the world, the west coast of the US, that is, that allows you to become the person you can become. There's some kind of openness and curiosity here that you don't have to hold back. You can just become the person you wanted to become. And I'm by no means the only one who has a similar story. The most famous immigrant composer from the East Coast here is John Adams, of course, and if you ask him, he would say exactly the same thing, that moving here made it possible for him to find his language and his grammar and become the John Adams we know today.
As a Pakistanian, how did you come to conducting then?
That was just an accident, really, or a fluke, or a kind of a secondary thought. I was thinking that maybe I should know something about conducting, as nobody else was likely to conduct my music, for instance. And we have had a group of young composers studying at the same time, many of whom are very well known at the moment, like Kaija Saariaho and Magnus Lindberg and so on and so forth. And we started an association together called Ears Open, and we started arranging concerts and you know, taking new music to the people outside the sort of normal concert venues. We went to prisons, we went to old people's homes, we went to gas stations and God knows where, and we had small ensembles and somebody had to conduct them, so I decided to start studying conducting just to be able to do that. And then I realized it somehow came quite naturally to me, and I enjoyed it a lot. And I got a lot of good feedback from the people I was working with, and I thought maybe there's something to be developed here. So I started to conduct quite a wide variety of pieces and repertoire. And then I realized that I was actually able to make a living as a conductor, which is, of course, much easier than making a living as a composer. And then I became a conducting ER service when when my colleagues, older colleagues, either were indisposed or got sick, or some of them actually died, sadly. So I quite often jumped in. As I was young and I was fearless, and I learned music very quickly those days. So I was doing this for a couple of years, and I jumped in for fairly famous people, including Fruebeck de Burgos in Stockholm and Luciano Berio in Gothenburg and so on and so forth. And finally, this is where my life story touches the, California for the first time. I replaced MTT, who had injured his arm, I believe, in London in 1983 in Mahler's Third Symphony with the Philharmonia. Ernest Fleischmann happened to be at that concert. He was the former managing director of the LA Philharmonic, and he came to talk to me after the concert and said, well, you should come and conduct in LA because I think that our orchestra and you would be a good match, and so on and so forth. And I thought he was stark raving mad. but then I decided to go and try it out anyway. And yes, there was some kind of an instant connection between me and the players, and it was very hard to explain, but some kind of almost like a familiarity at first sight. And I then felt that, okay, this group of people is going to be a very big influence in my life in whatever capacity. Of course, at that point, I had no idea that I would end up becoming the next music director in a few years' time. But I knew that there was a musical and personal connection that was kind of rare.
And did it turn out that they were an influence in your life? Certainly you were an influence in the lives, the life of the orchestra and the lives of the musicians and the cultural life of LA and California.
These things are never one-way streets, never ever. And a conductor never achieves anything alone. And of course, I was very young when I went there, and I was still in my early 30s when I started my tenure as a music director. And of course, to even try to imagine that one would be somehow fully formed at that point would be ridiculous. And of course, I learned a lot from them. And I think, yeah, it's hard to measure, of course, but I think they shaped me as much as I shaped them. And somehow from them, I learned the joy of music making and the joy of working with other people and the kind of excitement of the sort of physical act of playing and the being part of that sound and all that. Because I had a very sort of theoretical, quite a rigid sort of intellectual point of view when I went there. And to my defense, I can say that I learned quite quickly. I realized quickly that what I was supposed to do in Southern California was not to kind of import a concept from Europe and then kind of bury myself inside a sort of a ivory tower of European intellectualism, but rather to emphasize whatever was unique in the identity of the LA Philharmonic and somehow encourage the orchestra's quest to become more naturally integrated into the everyday life of the citizens of LA and somehow becoming a part of life. When I got there, the orchestra was good. They played extremely well. They had a very strong subscriber base and all that, but somehow I felt that there was a disconnect between the life of LA and the life of the Philharmonic, and I thought that maybe this is something that I should be working on. And of course, the big moment for all of us was the opening of the new hall back in 2003.
The Disney Hall.
Disney Hall and Walt Disney Concert Hall, and that finally changed the game for all of us.
What is your position now as a conductor, as principal conductor of Philharmonia Orchestra in London and in your guest conducting around the world?
Well, I have now my old relationships with orchestras that I've been working with for years, and that is something I want to keep going. So in this country, it's mostly Chicago Symphony and the LA Philharmonic, and now it's a great joy to be back in San Francisco because I conducted this orchestra in the early 2000s, maybe 2003 or 2004, and I really enjoyed it. And now I'm back, and it's nice to be back with a West Coast orchestra for starters, and they're very good and very quick and responsive. A lot of fun, really enjoying it. In Europe, besides the Philharmonia, I work with the Bavarian Radio in Munich and with the Vienna Philharmonic. Mostly I do some opera at La Scala in Paris. I go back to the Met in a few years' time. So it's the usual loop where lots of my colleagues are also. But I try to keep my Scandinavian roots alive. So I go back to Sweden where I had my Swedish radio orchestra. I go there frequently. I go back to Finland. So that's basically the map at the moment.
We're near the end of our interview, and I wanted to ask you how you find time to compose in this busy schedule of conducting.
Well, basically, I'm conducting only half the year, and the rest is family time, recreation time, seeing friends, holidays, reading, going to the cinema. So for me, the ideal balance between conducting and the rest of my life would be maybe 40% conducting and 60% of the other stuff. So at the moment, it is a bit tight, but I'm going to work on the balance in the future.
Asapekka Salmon, it's a great pleasure to have you on Curtain Call.
Thank you very much.
Asapekka Salonen, extraordinary conductor and extraordinary composer. You can hear all of these talents in evidence when he performs with the San Francisco Symphony in concerts tonight and tomorrow night at 8 o'clock at Davis Symphony Hall. Music on the program by Sibelius and Asapekka Salonen and Wagner. Excerpts from Götterdämmerung. Violin Concerto of Asapekka Salonen's is being performed by Lila Josefovitz. And it is an extraordinary piece. And we know that it's extraordinary because of its sound, but we also know that it's extraordinary because it just won the Grawemeyer Award. It's a $100,000 prize, kind of like the Nobel Prize of music composition. We don't have a recording of that, but we do have a recording of Asapekka Salonen's Piano Concerto, which was composed in 2007. We're going to hear the conclusion of that as we go out of this extended edition of Curtain Call. It's performed by Yefim Bronfman with the Los Angeles Philharmonic, Asapekka Salonen conducting. Before we do go to that music, though, let's give away a pair of tickets to the concerts at Davies Symphony Hall. It will be your choice of this evening or tomorrow evening. The concerts are at 8 o'clock. And we will take caller number 4 to 584-2020, 584-2020. This is for a pair of tickets to the concert tonight or tomorrow night, both concerts at 8, at Davies Symphony Hall in San Francisco, to the San Francisco Symphony with Asapekka Salonen on the podium and also as the composer of his award-winning violin concerto. Caller number 4 to 584-2020 gets that pair of tickets. I'm Charles Sipos. Thanks for listening. It's Curtain Call on KRCB Santa Rosa. Efim Bronfman in the conclusion of Esa-Pekka Salonen's Piano Concerto. Esa-Pekka Salonen conducts the San Francisco Symphony with his Grawemeyer Award-winning violin concerto. Lila Josefowitz is performing on violin. The concerts are tonight and tomorrow night at 8 o'clock. I have one pair of tickets remaining. We'll take caller number one for this set. The number to call is 584-2020.
Charles Sipos is a composer and teacher of piano, composition, theory, and music appreciation throughout all of the North Bay. Information at transcend.com. TRANSCEND.com. This is KRCB FM Santa Rosa.